All right, everybody, welcome in. This is the Stick and Hack Show. I am your host, Adam Grubb, and this is a Stick and Hack Classic. We are on summer hiatus so I can get my golf game rocking and rolling. And in the meantime, we're going to take you back to some classic episodes and interviews of some huge guests that we couldn't believe we were able to get on the Stick and Hack Show. But nonetheless, we did, and we are very, very excited to replay to you the Jim Davis interview, the creator of Garfield, who in his own right is an incredible golfer. Not Garfield. Garfield's a cartoon, but Jim Davis is. And he told some incredible stories about Garfield, about cartoons, being a cartoonist, and of course, the hilarious world of golf that we know and love today. It's Jim Davis, a classic episode and a classic interview as Stick and Hack goes back in time for some great episodes. Hopefully the summer is great for you. We'll see you in October with brand new episodes of the Stick and Hack Show. All right, so we move on. Speaking of characters, the conversation, cartoonist and Stick and Hack member, Jim Davis, creator of Garfield, who turns 42 years old and is the most iconic cartoon character of our generation, if not all generations. We are proud and honored to have Mr. Davis on the program and as a member of Stick and Hack. Jim, how are you?
Just fine. Good to see you, Adam. Good to see you, Mike.
Hello, Jim.
So, you know, this is a pretty cool moment for us. I know you probably get this a lot, and you're very sweet to take your time and be on the show. Golf is important to you. It's been a part of your life for many, many years, we're going to do our best to talk about golf, but it's very challenging to not just say thank you right off the bat for what you created and the cartoon that you probably don't even realize how it affected so many lives, so many kids. Kids still today, my kids included, know the name Garfield. And you created him 42 years ago, and to this day, he is still iconic. He is still mesmerizing. He is still funny. And the cast of characters that you created is probably one of the most beloved in all of comics. How does that resonate with you today, knowing what you have done with Garfield over these years?
I try not to think about it because the pressure would crush me if I thought about it every time, you know, I did a gag. I know what comics meant to me when I was growing up, and if it had half the effect on anybody else, I can understand that for sure, because, you know, I grew up with Peanuts and Beetle Bailey and High and Lois, DC, Wizard of It, and it meant a lot, because think about it, we, you know, every morning we have breakfast with those characters, day in, day out, for as long as 50 years. And I guess it's one thing in our life that shows that you can go back. There is something that you can count on, you know. Right. And it's positive, too. I know it rebalances the scales a little bit between, you know, the very real, sometimes depressing things going on in the news. You know, we have the humor and give people a little smile.
Do you find humor in golf?
Yeah, absolutely. I find humor in everything, but yeah, absolutely with golf.
What would you say in your golf life is one of those things where you look at it and every single time, like every single time it's funny. Either maybe it's somebody falling down, maybe it's somebody whiffing on their shot, maybe it's somebody throwing a tantrum. What do you, Jim Davis, find hilarious about the game of golf?
I think it's the meltdown when somebody just bares their soul. Some person who's like very controlled, very professional in their life, and you get them on a golf course and it all comes out. It's like, you know, jumping and whirling and throwing the clubs and everything like that. Yeah. You know, it's you never do in front of family or associates or anything like that. It's an honest moment. And I have to step away sometimes because I know they're in pain, but I'm behind a tree laughing. I think it's hysterical.
So, Jim, let's talk about your golf game. How long have you been playing golf? And, you know, what is it about golf that you find so enjoyable and keeps you coming back to the game?
I started golf seriously in 1985 because before that I was a jogger. I played racquetball. I played tennis, things like that. I had an old gymnastics injury from college, and I had to have a back operation, a laminectomy. So they said, the doctor said, after this, you can walk and you can play golf. And so I said, okay, I'll give it a try. I immediately fell in love with it because I got walking down a grassy fairway on a sunny day is so cathartic.
Yeah.
You know, it's, it really does. And I guess the challenge of the game, can be frustrating, but it's also, having fun with your mind and right. and attacking a challenge like that. Like, yeah. I know you had, Noah, the peaceful golfer. You know, yeah. I like to play Zen golf. Yeah. Not worried about the shot I just hit. I'm not laboring over the shot I'm going to hit. I just play golf in the ever-present, tapping into the sum total of my motor nervous memories, you know. And I try to relax.
What the hell are you talking about, Jim?
Even some days, I can even rise to a higher plane and channel the great golf.
Oh, my.
I love it.
Or more often in my case, like Charles Barkley. But, it's just that it's a long walk. It's a casual, you know, chat with friends. It's such a great time, a great escape. I love it.
Well, as a creative, I can assume that you are in your mind a lot, and you're looking at things, you're seeing things, and you're always thinking, just like a painter or a sculptor or a photographer or anybody in that creative space, you're looking at something, you're saying, okay, how can I turn that into something that can be useful for me in my everyday? Well, what types of personalities and what types of things would you see on the golf course where you would say, okay, boom, that's at least, maybe it's not about golf, but at least that's a temperament or a personality quirk that you can move and work into your characters at Garfield?
I think it's watching people process things that you watch. Some people are playing with other people's minds, like Lee Trevino always did, you know, with his comments and stuff like that. It's the trice talk and having fun. I pick up gags from that. And then it's watching people trying to play over their heads, you know, trying to hit the impossible shots. I can't get my camera out fast enough, you know, try to record some of those moments. It's the humanity in the game. I guess that's it. It runs the gamut from, you know, joy to wrath. And then the physical stuff, you know, it happens. The throwing of the clubs that, you know, I've never seen a driver come down out of a tree, ever.
Same. You
know? Yeah. So I saw a cousin just flip his driver over a little grassy knoll. There was a lake over there. Never saw that.
That's
stuff, the physical gag.
Yeah.
So this Friday, Jim, we release and bring to the public, and more specifically to Stick and Hack members and Stick and Hack Nation, Hack Mulligan, which is our comic, and we are bringing that to the world. And it is being built around that theory of the characters of golf, and that at any point the game is funny, and it does humanize you, and it humbles you, and it showcases your best and your worst, and it's everything that you say about your game, you can say about people. And so Hack Mulligan is really an embodiment of all of us as golfers and those that we see around us, because with the exception of Mike and a few select, you know, one percenters out there that are very good at golf, most of us are not. And, you know, we can be, but typically we're not. And so Hack Mulligan is bringing that in. And as a creator of one of the most beloved cartoon characters and personalities and cast of characters and a family. For you, when did you think, oh my God, this is happening? People are starting to recognize Garfield. People are starting to pick it up and being syndicated. I've got a crew of staff. When did you say Garfield is Garfield?
It was actually very early on. I was syndicated June 19th, 1978. In August, I had 40 papers. In August, our biggest paper, the Chicago Sun-Times, dropped Garfield because they had a budget cut back and decided to cut their newest feature because they would get the least grief. And within a week, they had like 1,300 phone calls, letters, everything poured in demanding that Garfield be returned. And I think it was the cat lovers who initially, you know, came to Garfield's defense. And they reinstated it. I thought right then, I go, okay, I have something at any rate that people are enjoying already. So I think just the fact that I had an animal, I remember... The Washington Post didn't take Garfield initially because the editor said, I don't want a strip I can't draw. And he saw an animal strip.
But don't ever underestimate the cat lovers. I think that's the real rule that we're learning here.
Absolutely.
So you were syndicated in 1978. You were in 40 papers, and then at some point, someone said, "Okay, let's turn this into an animated short. Let's turn Garfield into a color. Let's bring more characters. Let's keep this going. Running a weekly strip is enough on its own." But then for someone to say, "Okay, now you need a 30-minute show, and now you need Saturday morning cartoons, and now you need this, and this." At that point, did you say, "Okay, this has gone further than I had originally intended. I just wanted to do a weekly strip," or were you like, "Yeah, this is where I see Garfield and where I want it to be"?
My big dream was to have enough papers so that I could make enough income to not have to do freelance. So I wanted to be able to be full-time cartoonist. That was my dream. Everything else is just icing on the cake. But I had worked in advertising, commercial art, and things like that. And actually, it was very exciting to get the opportunity to do things like publishing and design book covers and posters. And then when TV came along, I thought, well, this will be great. In fact, in ways, working with television, with animation, is easier than doing a comic strip because you get to let a gag run for as long as you want in animation. But in a newspaper, you only have 7 inches, 3 frames to
right.
set up a gag, twist it, and resolve it in very few comic lines. So when TV came along, it gave me an opportunity to examine the Garfield character and turn him over and do things with him that I didn't have the time or space to do in the newspaper. And so I think that also introduced him to another audience as well and contributed to the following. So it was all good.
Yeah, Jim, that's actually a perfect segue into my next question, which I know you've probably been asked this 1,000 times, but what did the creative process look like for you on a daily basis trying to create new gags and put out a new strip every day?
I don't write every day because I'm not funny every day.
Right.
You know, some days focused on something else, doing
sure.
something else, and then funny days strike. And I put everything aside and I write on those days, and I can do, several days worth of writing on those days. And it's like a working meditation for me because what I do, I sit back and I imagine Garfield until I can conjure him up in my head, like watching a TV set. In my mind, and I don't tell him what to do. I can put him in a situation. I can have him look out a window, go to the beach, put him up a tree, something like that. And then I watch, and then I ask myself, what would he do? Where would he go? What would he say? What would the other characters do and say? And then when something funny happens, I back up 3 frames and I cut it off. So I edit. He dictates the humor. He has to make me laugh first, and then I write it down. So it sounds kind of odd that I just sit back and basically daydream and watch him until he does a gag.
Yeah.
And that's what I do. I can recognize a gag, and then I write it down after he does it in my head.
That's amazing.
So, that's basically how I write.
The just for the listeners out there and the layperson, a gag is the joke, but it's a industry term utilized for the punchline and what that little micro scene is.
Yep.
And don't underestimate the difficulty of trying to develop a story and an idea and an issue and a protagonist and then an end punch in 3 frames. And in less than 25 words, as rules, there are all so many different rules. There's rules in television, the rules in movies, rules in this little dog and pony show here that we're doing. but there's rules that you kind of created for yourself for Garfield, and you tried to stay within those boundaries. Is that correct?
Yeah, I do as few lines, I do as few words as possible, because the trick is to arrive at the punchline at the precise time that the reader does. Now, they're reading it in their head. So they're going faster than you could ever talk or tell a joke. And so if you can arrive at the punchline just a nanosecond before they figure it out, that evokes that involuntary laugh response, or at least that's my philosophy of it. So I don't try to make it do so much art, and do silhouettes and so many words that they've already figured out the gag before they got to the gag. that's disappointing. Or I don't try to make it so convoluted that they haven't figured the gag out for a while and we lose the timing in the last frame. So the trick is the simplicity, flow through it. They don't want to spend a long time with a comic strip anyway. There are other comic strips. You want to get on with the day. So keep it simple, funny, a little bit out of left field, a little bit off balance, something relatable. More often than not, when people laugh, the gag is because they're saying, isn't that true?
Right.
That's more important than being funny, actually.
Yeah.
So that way you touch the reader, they relate to it, and after 50 years, there's a certain amount of affection that's developed for it. So that's the trick.
I can't imagine someone creating something and then in their head thinking, okay, in 42, 45 years, 50 years, a lifetime, this character is still going to be relevant. Garfield is still relevant today, and you could go back. It's evergreen in its humor because of what you just said. It's just everyday things that are happening, and that takes me to comics in general. And growing up at the age, I'm just a shade younger than Garfield, as I believe Mike is as well. I don't know much about Mike, but I can assume that he's about the same age. the fact that I grew up with Far Side. I grew up with Family Circus. I grew up with Garfield, Snoopy, Calvin and Hobbes, very iconic characters, Ren and Stimpy, Beavis and Butthead. So those are the people that I grew up with, and I'm sure Mike did as well.
Yeah.
Did you look at those as competitors? Were you guys more friendly? Did you know Gary Larson? Did you know some of these other writers and cartoonists? Or did you guys have a Saturday conference call? Like what happened in the world of cartoonists?
Cartoonists are the biggest fans of the other cartoonists. There's zero competition between them because everybody writes a little bit differently. In fact, we go, wow, how'd they come up with that gag? Or wow, how do they draw that character like that? And so everybody's got a little different spin. So we're not actually competitive, you know, in that sense. And, it's like a bunch of big kids getting together during the annual awards, Rubens, we call it. And then for many years, too, there was a PGA tournament called the BC Open in upstate New York, or Nineveh. And we'd get together several cartoonists, the golfers among them, and play golf on the pro-am before the PGA tournament. So that ran for several years. And it's just a great time. It's a bunch of silly guys and girls getting together and laughing. So pretty much making fools of ourselves on a golf course, but always a good time. And like I say, we're huge fans of each other. It's nice work if you can get it.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah, it's if nice you can get it.
Yeah, if you can get it. Yeah, it's sparse.
Yeah, you're spot on there, Jim.
Yeah, exactly.
Being a world-renowned cartoonist is great work if you could get it. what of those that I mentioned, though, to go back to that for a second, which one was your favorite? Were you more Far Side-esque, or did you like Beavis and Butthead or Family Circus?
Actually, there are pieces of each of those that I really like. The Beavis and Butthead, I mean, that's sophomoric. I can't get enough of that stuff. I would say certainly the Far Side was very thoughtful. I mean, Gary Larson, by education, he was a zoologist, you know. And now these days, even though he's retired from doing the panel, he's playing at the Seattle nightclub, you know, and writing children's books and stuff like that. So it's really a wonderful group of guys. So I grew up on Peanuts. I learned about the power of the gentle gag and the great relationships and the very simple lines with Beetle Bailey. Mort Walker always referred to us as Bigfoot cartoonists. We drew big hands and big feet and did big gags and stuff like that. And so that just good-natured kind of physical humor between the characters, and certainly with Johnny Hart with DC, just the humor was just out of left field and just big stupid words and dinosaurs that would say gronk, you know, and the general silliness of it was showed me one thing. It was really very important those guys were having fun doing the strips, and as a result, people had fun reading them. It's attitude, and you can't legislate it. You gotta have fun doing it, and so that another reason why it's such a great job to have.
There is a story that the ad agency for Geico, and this is a story, but allegedly true. The ad agency and the guy that came up with the caveman ad campaign for Geico was a BC fan and was a comic fan, and had the idea and the concept based upon his love for the comic BC. And it's so funny, and the Geico commercials were iconic in their own right. with the caveman.
Yeah.
It's funny to think that somebody's childhood experience would then bring them into, hey, why don't we do this, and it become a massive success on its own. I don't know if that's true or not. I might have just made that up, but no, it's true. I promise.
Jim, one question I had in my mind, who on the PGA Tour is Garfield most like?
Well, the obvious one would be John Daly, but quite frankly, I'd have to give the nod to Craig Stadler.
There we go.
Come on. He was, when he was playing, I just loved to watch him, move. He'd seem grumpy, but then you'd see him smile. You know, he's got kind of grumpy exterior, you know, when he's playing, but you could tell he had a real soft heart. And I think that's the magic to Garfield, too. He's not perfect, but he's cool with that. And so I would say he's definitely Craig Stadler.
We're with Jim Davis, creator of Garfield, here on the Stick and Hack Show. You know, Garfield's iconic, no doubt about it. Massive success, many, many years. Kids love him. Parents love him. They love the entire characters and the plush toys and the shirts and all that stuff. It's amazing. But would you agree that the Garfield suction cup is a bit much? And can we just, for the love of God, be done with that?
Yeah, that was late 80s, early 90s. It was too much of a good thing. Seriously, he'd been behind the scenes. What happened was, I had actually designed the dolls with Velcro because cats like to climb curtains. And we thought, wouldn't that be fun to have Velcro in and people would stick the dolls to the curtains and stuff like that. And it came back from China with suction cups. I go, what? So I said, okay, we'll stick it to the window here. And if it's up for a couple of days, we'll approve it. So we approved it. And next thing, people were putting them in their cars. And then somebody broke into a car, and they stole the doll, leaving all of the sound equipment, a purse, and all kinds of stuff in the car. And it made headlines. And that started a rash of break-ins in cars to steal the dolls, which means people were buying more of the dolls, and I got that publicity, and it started this whole thing, and tens of millions of dolls sold all over the world. It started this huge rage, and they marked them up to like $80 a piece and everything. We told our manufacturer, stop making all of the dolls. In an order for 10,000, make 5,000. Don't ship them. Well, they didn't. They didn't control it. Believe it or not, when the contract was up for that manufacturer, we didn't renew it. It was a huge percentage of our income. We didn't make another doll for 5 years. We dried the market up just to get them out of there. And now, even to this day, no more than 25% of any plush order can be with suction cups. Not that there's, you know, rage anymore, but just, you know, generally on principle. Yeah. But it was too much of a good thing. I saw what happened to Cabbage Patch Kids. You saw what, you know, anything that gets that popular is too popular, and you wear yourself out. Yeah. We only have, as opposed to Disney, that has, you know, hundreds of characters, we only had, you know, one orange character. And so we always had to watch the brand for that reason. But you nailed it. It's too much of a good thing.
Now, to be fair, though, if Hack Mulligan becomes a plush toy with the suction cups, I'm going to make about 5,000 of those a day. There's no doubt about that. Because that's literally what we want. We want Hack Mulligan on the back of someone's window.
That would be incredible. Someday, Adam.
Yeah, someday. By the way, this Friday, Hack Mulligan hits your inbox and as well as Instagram and other areas of Stick and Hack. It's our take on the golf cartoon. We're with Jim Davis, creator of Garfield. The question. I know, Mike, you have a question, but just to touch back on the PGA comic deal, whatever the hell it's called.
Yes.
What's it called? Pro-Am.
Pro-Am.
The Pro-Am. Did you ever win that? Did you ever play well? Was that just something that you did for fun and were with your buddies and hanging out, or did you take that seriously?
That was a PGA tournament, so we always played in the Pro-Am day before the actual tournament started. There was a short shot contest, though, where I won that, teamed up with Brad Faxon on a chip and putt, and of course, he's one of the greatest putters ever, and that was fun. And actually, I played a round with John Daly.
Oh, you did?
And
awesome.
Yeah. I have to tell this story. I got to say those three words everyone ever wanted to say. It's Johnny Hart with BC, John Daly and I, par five. He tees off with a 2-iron, and he wasn't too happy with it. He just hit it a little bit. I tee off 50 yards in front of him and hit a career driver that went about 3 yards past John's drive. Johnny and I ran up to the ball, and as soon as John Daly arrived, I got to say, "You're away, John." Johnny Hart and I started hitting each other and then wrestling. We're finding we're on the ground. We're laughing, rolling. John Daly standing there looking at us. He was the nicest guy. It was a couple of years after he won the PGA there at Crooked Stick. It was 93, I think it was. And he was a sweet man. He was nice to everybody. And it was a great experience.
That's awesome. You know, Jim, why is it, you know, when people like myself and Adam, we think back about Garfield and we get this childlike feeling, you know, why do you think, you know, people get that sort of nostalgic feeling about Garfield and thinking back about iconic characters like that?
When you read a character as you're growing up and you learn to read, and maybe it helps teach you to read. Then you go to school. Then you marry. Then you raise a family. Then you become a grandparent. And you're reading that same character, doing the same thing day in and day out. I think it's that kind of constant, that kind of affection you develop over the course of a lifetime. You think, this has been here with me my entire life. And maybe, you know, maybe feel a little better at certain times, but I think it's that part of it. It's really hard to explain. It's not like a TV series that's in and out in a few seasons. It's not like other things that age and grow away. You know, Daisy's or Blondie's still hot.
She never ages.
They're constant and same positive and they're there for you and they're there for one reason, and that's to entertain and make you feel better. There's nothing not to like about it. I think that's it.
Jim, what are your favorite character traits of Garfield, Odie, and John?
Okay. Garfield's realistic. In a time where we're made to feel guilty about overeating and oversleeping, not exercising, he does all those things, and he's cool with that. I think he relieves our guilt in some way.
Yeah.
He's a very honest guy. He's very realistic. And he's just out after the basic things we're all out for, and that's food, shelter, and love. You know, it's that simple. He's a purist. Odie loves everybody, loves everything. He's a free spirit. There's just something refreshing about him. He's got that innocence of childhood. And you know he'll never lose that. I think he's sweet. We started a Facebook site for Odie, and occasionally posted an art. That's all he would say, but he doesn't talk. Okay, you know, 3 million fans.
right. He's got 3 million fans on that Facebook page, and I think your mom and my mom are fans of
that's
ARF.
our audience.
And John, he's eternally, you know, he loves Mondays. He's just eternally optimistic and he's loving and giving, you know, he's insecure a little bit, but he's always looking on the bright side of things. You know, he's just, he's always up. I think he's every man. He's all of our insecurities and everything. So you gotta like him for his attitude. At least he's given it the old college try.
I think you can learn a lot from those character traits, and you can, you're reading the comics are not just about humor, but about getting to know the characters and then embodying them in your best way and say, look, if John can be excited about Mondays, well, so can I. And I know that they're two-dimensional characters and they're made up and they're fictional. I get that. But there is something you can learn from going through that and being a part of their lives. The last question, Jim, is what are your favorite character traits about us, Mike and Adam, Stick and Hack?
I'd have to say your humility.
Thank you.
Appreciate that. Thank you. That's a cop-out answer. I'm looking for an actual compliment. But.
Well, you're not that complex, Adam. So
no, I'm not. You're exactly right. And we know you're not.
Absolutely not. I am as simple as they come.
You want to talk about somebody of the two of us, I would say that you're more like Garfield and I'm more like John.
Absolutely.
Eternally optimistic. You are pretty one-dimensional. You have a wife, you play golf, and you go to work.
That's right.
End of day.
Absolutely.
Right? So
keep it simple.
Go. Yeah. So
then I eat. Then I eat at some point along the way.
And don't exercise. You didn't know this, but you created Garfield and the Mike Ryan complex.
That's right.
Well,
you know, they need each other. You guys need each other for that very reason. You know, it's those contrasts, those conflicts that make for real relationships.
Hey, buddy. Excellent. There, how about that? There we go. Jim Davis, creator of Garfield on the Stick and Act Show. Jim, thank you so much for your time and just congratulations on everything. You changed generations. You created something iconic and amazing, and we couldn't be more happy to have you on the show and share just a brief bit of your wisdom and your career and your love for golf. Thank you for being a Stick and Act member as well, Jim.
Well, thank you, guys. Great talking to you.
You too. Enjoy your day. All right, there he is, Jim Davis, everybody. That is a Stick and Hack classic for you. Hopefully you enjoyed that interview. And if you've not gone back in time and listened to some of the older shows that we've done over the last couple of years, do yourself a favor over the next few months and do that. New shows are coming out October of this year as we are on summer hiatus so that the hack, me, can get my golf game back in check after a horrible spring. I decided to take some time to just concentrate on golf and that and my family, of course. That's what I'm doing. Back at it in October with new episodes of the Stick and Hack Show. Enjoy your week. We'll talk soon.
Okay, we're done. This has been the Stick and Hack Show. Go to stickandhack.com to become a free member of the world's greatest golf club without the course.